चरण पधारे हरि, चरणों में जगह दे हमें चरण राहि। में शरण पधारे हरि, चरणों में जगह देना, चरणों में जगह देना। प्रभु भार कृपा करके हमको बना देना। करुणानि दीना माथे करुणा परसाओ तू, सोए हुए भाग्य को हे नाथ जगाओ तू। हे नाथ जगाओ तू, प्रभु भार कृपा करके रखो मना लेना। साध मेरे नाम भनवारा दवे पर लगा देना, मेरी नव बंधारा दवे उस पर लगा देना। सफर लगा देना हो प्रभु भार कृपा करके जो मना देना। हे प्रभु भार कृपा करके मैं संत का सेवा कहूँ, गुरु चरण का दास हूँ। संत का सेवा कहूँ, गुरु चरण का दास हूँ। गुरु चरण का दास हूँ, हे प्रभु भार कृपा करके को मैं ना लेना। हे प्रभु भार कृपा करके मुझको बना लेना। भार नाही नाथ भूला ना मुझे, ਇਸ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਮੈਂ ਕੈਲਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਬਾਤ ਭੁਲਾ ਨਾ ਮੁੰਗੇ ਇਸ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਮੈਂ ਕੈਲਾ Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Thank you, Subarna. Okay, so this is the last day of this presentation, humble presentation. Those who need translation, please sit closely to the translator. So, anyway, in the last, all of the things that didn't fit into the previous themes will be presented today. This is just the miscellaneous thing. If you remember, the first theme was first experiences on the Radha Damodar bus. Then second was bizarre events, which was kind of funny. And third one was the fights, which was also exciting and strange. And so today it's kind of miscellaneous things. I tried to think of some more Sankirtan experiences. One that, especially one in particular that kind of changed my life. I told you some things that gave me some realizations. But, we all, I think, those who are preaching, especially those who sell books, they have some kind of interesting experiences, sometimes deep experiences, but if an experience changes your life, then it's more significant. So I had one experience. It was some kind of marathon. I don't remember which part of the year it was. I was at the peak of my, book distribution career, where, you go out and it takes maybe an hour to get warmed up, and then you go deep into kind of a samadhi, right? And once you go into this depth of meditation, you can't stop, right? You have to continue. Because if you stop for one reason or another, then you have to start again from from where you began. And then it takes another hour to go to that same depth of level of samadhi. I'm sure Vijay Prabhu can explain this somehow. I don't know how it works, but I guess it's based upon the absorption. Like, even when you chant japa, it takes a little while to get absorbed, in the mantra, and then you find that your mind settles into it, and then you get more out of it because you're absorbed. So I think everything in spiritual life is like that. It takes some time for absorption, whether it's deity worship or scriptural study or chanting or book distribution. So this was a time when I was distributing many books, and I was getting good results, and I didn't want to stop. In fact, I think there was quite a number of days when I just forgot to take prasadam. You're really absorbed if you forget to take prasadam. You just forget about eating completely, That's a test. I guess that's a landmark, or a mark where you can understand that now, wow, today I forgot to eat, Then you know you're doing quite well, at a deep level. So I was distributing a lot of books and meeting a lot of people, mainly in the parking lots, as we were distributing in front of the shopping malls and shopping centers, and people park their cars outside and go into the mall, and then they come out with all this stuff and they throw it in the trunk of their car, and then you time it so that you come up to their car just as before they close the door, or just after they close the door, before they start moving the car. And so you knock on the door and motion, they roll the window down, and you insert one of Prabhupada's time bombs into their car, one of the books. And then you have so many different things you may say, according to that person's nature, like this. So anyway, this happened this happens all day. So anyway, there was one person that I inserted the book into the car and started speaking to me. And he held the book and he looked at me and he was listening. He looked at the book and looked at me again. And he said, a priori, you have accepted this tradition, this practice, a priori, without any consideration, without studying to see if it's actually true. Right? You've just accepted this blindly, a priori, right? Before, he said this word a few times, and I was stunned, you know, I didn't know how to respond, because no one ever said that to me before. And he was very forceful, and he said, so you're just a salesman. You don't even know what's in these books. You're just going around, selling these books, but you don't know what's in these books. And as he was speaking to me, it was like I was listening. Because, I mean, not only was it that I was surprised because I never heard this before, no one ever said this to me, but something inside of me told me that it was Krishna speaking to me through this person, and that I was supposed to listen to this person. And I didn't argue with him. I just stood there with my mouth open, you know, looking at him, and he just gave it to me, you know, just gave me the sauce, as we say. And I walked away from the car just like bewildered, and I thought, is it true? Okay, you know, all right, I'm selling these books, but I'm not spending enough time to learn what's in these books, you know. And certainly I don't want what he said to be true. I don't want to just blindly accept this tradition, this religion, this practice without due consideration, without a depth of study like that. So from that day forward, I decided that I was going to read the books every day, no matter what. And at that time, you know, like in the 70s, you know, like reading the books was Maya, more or less, you know. You know, if somebody saw you sitting reading the books, they would say, hey, why are you not engaged in devotional service, Prabhu? You know, obviously you don't have enough to do. Come with me. And then they would, you know, engage you in some kind of, you know, practical service. I remember even the day that I was initiated, was in Cincinnati, that the deities were brought into a rented apartment where the devotees were staying, or rented house it was. And I heard that, you know, on the day of your initiation, you should fast and you should chant extra rounds, as many as you can. So I was doing that. And I remember I was sitting in the temple room and chanting, and I had chanted 20 rounds, 25 rounds, and 30 rounds, and I was determined that today I have to chant more, you know. And every 15 minutes or something, the cook would come in and he would look around and, you know, it was just me sitting there, you know, chanting on my beats. And then he would, you know, look a little disappointed and then turn around and go back into the kitchen and start cooking. So then he'd come in again and, you know, look and see me chanting and then make a frowning face and then go back into the kitchen. And every 10, 15 minutes he would come in and I'd be sitting there chanting, you know. And so then, you know, he was to cook the initiation feast. There was, I think, 5 or 6 devotees we were initiated. And then afterwards, after the feast, after the whole ceremony was finished and after the feast was finished, I was sitting around the devotees and I told them that, yeah, I chanted 32 rounds and I feel really good. And then the cook said, what? You chanted, what, 32 rounds? You mean you were sitting in the temple room chanting extra rounds? And you didn't come in. I was coming in to see if I can get help. I thought you were just chanting your 16 rounds, so I didn't bother you. But you were chanting extra rounds, so if I knew that, I would have grabbed you immediately. You know, so, you know, God forbid that you chant extra rounds. You know, so he he never, I guess he never thought that someone would chant extra rounds, you know, on this. So anyway, books, reading the books was something like that too. If you were caught reading the books, then it was like, what are you doing, you know? I'm reading Prabhupada. Oh, you're in Maya. So anyway, I was determined that after I had this experience with this man in the car, I thought, I got to read every day, no matter what. So every day, either write, like sometimes I would place the book on top of the box and I would take prasadam and I would be reading it when I take prasadam. Of course, that wasn't so good, but, and or I would take prasadam and then like stand up and then read the book. And I took an hour out of my sankirtan day, every day, 1 hour, right? Exactly, no more, no less, and I read Bhagavad Gita, or some Bhagavatam, or some other book. And I didn't tell anybody, you know, that I was just reading the books, you know, secretly, every day, because, you know, there was this pressure that, you know, you have to get your quota, you have to sell the books, you know, a certain amount, and so on and so forth. I said, okay, you know, I'll spend the whole morning selling the books, and I'll spend the whole afternoon, but for 1 hour, I'm going to sit and read the books, no matter what. And I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm doing this, you know. And actually what happened was, I became more Krishna conscious, you know, obviously from reading the books. And I became more enlivened from reading the books. And so maybe for a couple of days my score dropped a little bit, but then it started to rise and rise and rise and rise like that. And I started collecting more and distributing more books than I was doing previously, because I was starting to read the books and I became more conscious and I became more ecstatic and my intelligence became more purified from reading the books and my heart became more purified from associating with Prabhupada through his books. And the devotees started, you know, seeing that my results were increasing and increasing, and they started asking me, you know, what are you doing, you know? I'll tell you, but it's a secret. Don't tell anybody. You promise? Yes. I'm reading the books for 1 hour every day. Really? Oh, my God. You know? Reading the books, really. And yes, I feel so much enlivened from this that my results are increasing. And if they find out about this, you're going to be in big trouble, you know. So, yeah, I know. That's what I'm asking. Don't tell anybody. Okay. And I got like a few devotees to start reading the books every day, you know, secretly, you know. And our scores started to climb, you know, like this. And in any case, my van leader, Brajendranandana, he was already into that. He would stop an hour early and he would read like that. And I kind of thought that maybe it's just because he's older, he's an old guy, he needs to do that, us young guys should. But then I started to realize that I also need to do that. And I found that I was fortunate to be with him, this devotee, because he didn't, you know, give any tricky lines, you know, like we're helping people in, you know, feed people in Bangladesh or, you know, helping kids off drugs or whatever, you know, crazy. He didn't say any crazy lines like this. He just told everyone, you know, we're monks and we dedicate ourselves to God and we're distributing these books and we want to print more books and like this. He would just be very honest and straightforward and people listen to him and he was very expert at meeting young men and convincing. He would spend time talking with some of the young men who were interested in the philosophy, like on the street, he would spend up to half an hour, sometimes even an hour, preaching to people that he saw that had potential. And sometimes he would spend the whole afternoon, and sometimes he would take them and get in the van. So why don't you, he would give them prasad and bring them to the van, show them all the books, and tell them this is how we live, and this is our spiritual master. And then, you know, the person would be going, yeah, this is very interesting. And then we have a bus where we have deities there, and maybe, you know, if you want, I can bring you there. Yeah, yeah. And then he would get into the van and bring that person, you know, for an hour drive away, and he would drive the person to the van, and like this. Not every time, but often he had new devotees, he made new devotees like that. And it was very controversial what he was doing, because he wasn't, you know, out there slugging it out and on the street. And like this, he was spending time, quality time with quality people. And that was unheard of in those days. You know, nobody did that, only him. And some other senior people would criticize him for that. But he was convinced that this is what I want to do. I think this is right, and he said, well, I may, you know, okay, I won't be able to distribute as many books on that particular day, but if I just get one person to become a devotee and he distributes books, then that means I'm doubling my book distribution. And I thought, yeah, nobody ever thought of it that way. So he made a number of people, devotees, and they became book distributors, because practically anyone who joined at that time, 95% of the devotees were all book distributors, you know. So if you made a new devotee, he would become a book distributor, and then, you know, you would double, triple, quadruple, quintuple your book distribution by making new devotees, you know. So I thought, wow, that's really progressive, you know. And I thought it was great he was doing like that. So anyway, I was with him, and then finally we found out that he found out that I was reading every day, and he secretly said, yeah, that's really good, you're doing the right thing. And so anyway, I not only began reading every day, but I began memorizing chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And so during this time, I memorized four chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the Sanskrit, at least. And it helped me a lot. I felt closer to Prabhupada. I understood the philosophy more. I felt more aware what was going on. My intelligence was more clear, like this. So that's something that happened to me at this time. Just because this man told me, you know, a priori, you're just a salesman, you know, like that. And I thought, oh my God, is this true? You know, no, it can't be. You know? So this meeting this one person actually changed my life. I started studying more. And I think that everybody needs to contact Prabhupada through his books, and particularly study the philosophy, no matter what service you're doing. But especially if you're a preacher, you know, the preachers have to be very potent, they have to be very pure, they have to know the philosophy well, and they have to know how to present the philosophy. So if they're not reading regularly, then their potency starts to drop down more and more every day. So it was a very interesting time in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You know, the Americans have their way of doing things, and the Radha Damodar bus was very good for many young men. like I said, you know, everyone had to become regulated because you were sleeping in the temple room. There was no question of oversleeping, you know. And by that force of the situation, you know, if you have to wake up at 4 o'clock every day, no matter what, then it's just a matter of a few months or maybe a year at the most that it becomes part of your nature, you know, your second nature. You just get up and there's no big struggle, you know. It's just habit and you can easily get up. So the association was very potent because we were all living together. We are all honoring Prasadam together. We are all having class together. We are all in the arti together. We are all preaching together. And then we meet in the evening together and, you know, take some prasadam again. Somebody would read something to us. And we were driving out. We would chant bhajans together. And we were driving back to the bus. We would all, you know, read some books together. I remember when I was with Chaitanya Chandra, who I told you about, you know, Kojak, we read the whole Mahabharata together. You know, when I was driving, he would read. When he was driving, I would read. And we, you know, we finished the whole Mahabharata. That's a pretty big book, you know. So we did a lot of reading. And the I can tell you a little bit about the winter time. You know, it was pretty harsh because, you know, a bus is not very warm inside. You know, it's just a tin can, really. It's like being in this room, if you can imagine it, you know, like 20 below zero, and you're living in this you know, makeshift temple room. You can imagine how cold it gets, right? Because it's drafty, and, you know, there's, even if you have a heater, the heat just goes out through the cracks, and right? So we were living in the van, and in the bus, and they were basically, it was about the same, you know, living in the van, and, you know, we wake up in the morning, get our buckets, which we filled the night before with water, and we would stand out and, you know, and it was ice, you know. We thought that we were going to take a shower, but then, you know, nothing would come out because it was just a solid piece of ice in the bucket. And what do you do then, you know? It's really cold, you know. So we ended up just rolling in the snow, you know, just rubbing the snow on our body, you know. And when you do that, actually, it feels like sandpaper. You know, it's pretty harsh, rubbing snow. You know, it's like the Polar Bear Club, you know, the Russians in Siberia or something like this, you know. And then if we were on the bus, see, the steps to the bus were metal. So it was so cold that the metal was like an ice cube tray. You know, you ever touch your finger to an ice cube tray? And it's like, it gets stuck, right? So you take a shower and then you walk up the stairs and you know, your foot would get stuck on the step. And sometimes the devotees would rip their skin, you know, by they would get stuck on the. And they would go inside. It was cold inside. It was cold outside. It was just cold all the time, you know. You're cold in the morning, cold at night, you're cold. And then you're out on the street all day, you know. Outside all day, you know. It was quite an austerity. I mean, if it's cold, but if you're warm in the morning and warm at night, then okay, at least you can tolerate for 8 hours being outside. And if it's a little cold, you wear some boots and two socks and, you know, some long underwear and two sweaters and caps, right? You know, like this, you can survive. But it's like, when you sleep, it's cold. When you wake up, it's cold. And then you got to pour freezing cold water over you. After a few weeks of that, it's like, you know, about ready to scream. And that happens sometimes, you know, devotees. We, after showering, and we'd come inside, and we'd get dressed up and put all their stuff on, and they have Mangalarti, and then we'd all try to chant japa together inside. And this is all cold. Everyone's like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And, you know, we would, you know, they had these gas heaters, so that we had this thing, you know, on during the japa time, and all the devotees would be huddling around this gas heater, you know, standing around the gas heater, and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, the thing was burning away. And then suddenly, one of the devotees would just kind of crack, you know, and he would go, I can't do this anymore. I gotta go home. You know, it's too much. You know, I just can't stand it anymore. Let me out of here. And everybody would just look at him like, oh, there goes another one. Uh-oh, you know, what does that to me? Like that. And then, you know, the leader would have to, you know, somehow send him back to New York or, you know, Chicago, wherever he was from. It's okay. And then the class is, you know, you can imagine, you know, the class is like, you know, if you can tolerate this austerity for Prabhupada and to keep distributing his books, then it's guaranteed you'll go back to Godhead. And it's like, everyone, yeah, right. Back to Godhead, yeah. You're going to make it. You just got to tolerate this, just... You know, it was really like this, you know. It was pretty tough. You had to be tough to make it on the bus. You know? I told you how we, you know, slept like sardines at night because it was only so much space, and it was a head here, feet here, then another head, and feet, and then head. Like, we would stack the devotees so they can squeeze in. And if you came in late, the only way to get some space on the floor is you just stand there, hold up your sleeping bag, and just fall over, and you just somehow cut into the line. That was the only way to get some space, because everyone was packed together. Actually, it was good, because we keep each other warm, you know. I remember once, there was no space on the bus, and there was a whole bunch of boxes in the van, and so there was one seat, you know, one long seat that I guess would sit about three or four people. It was a cushioned seat in the van, the second seat, you know. In the front there were two, the driver's seat and the passengers, and then in the back there was none. So I was sleeping there, and then another body came in and said, I don't have any place to sleep now. And he just slept on top of me that night. You know, his name was Uddhava, you know. I said, it's okay, you can sleep on top of me. He said, are you sure? It's okay. I said, yeah, for one night it's all right. So... You know, it was sometimes it was like that, and I mean, usually the places we were staying in, there was never any hot water in the shower. You know, it was always just cold, only cold water, and it was like, you know, water from the Siberian glacier which had just melted. You know? It was not only cold; it was like ice cold. You know, and especially if it came dripping out, then it became like torture. You know. Like in the bottom of the basement of the St. Louis Temple, we had this kind of arrangement. Turn on the tap and just some, you know, very dripping cold, like glacier water. And you just have to go in there. Hare Krishna, Prabhupada! Prabhupada! It's really cold water. And then, you know, you'd be like red and, you know, you'd look effulgent with your whole body. Because then the room felt warm compared to the freezing water, that, you know, and your blood vessels would expand and, you know, you actually feel warmer after you take a cold shower. I don't know how it works. So, you know, sometimes we'd rub the snow on and sometimes we, whatever it was, like this. And then we'd be in there, you know, chanting together. And then the cook, you know, Mahamantra, who's now Madhav Maharaj, you know, he had to go into the kitchen and, you know, start cooking. But it was so cold that he couldn't turn the dials of the stove. They were stuck. They were, you know, frozen. So in order to get, just to get the, you know, the stove going, he had to go in there with a acetylene torch and, you know, thaw out the you know, the dials, and then he could turn it and then turn on the stove like this. So he came in there with some kind of torch and it would burn the, warm up the switch on the stove. He had to do this every day. So, as you can imagine, like, being in such a situation, and then, you know, it's like, okay, 4 o'clock, Prabhus, time to rise and glorify the spiritual master. It's like, wow, you know, you're tired, and, okay, you gotta get up. But you go through the morning program, and you take prasad, and somehow you force yourself, and then you're awake, and or at least you feel like you're awake. And then you go out and distribute books, and then, you know, it's like, practically fall asleep while you're talking to somebody. Yeah. There's three levels of what is it called? In when before you achieve nishta, there's laya, which means sleeping. One of the three distractions before you attain nishta. The first one is laya, L-A-Y-A. Laya. So it means sleep. So there's different levels of sleeping, you know. You fall asleep during your Gayatri, you know, because you're trying to meditate, and that's, you see a lot of devotees, you know, with their hand like this, and we would tell them, wow, you just set the world's record for the longest Gayatri, probably. Okay, fall asleep while you're saying Gayatri. That's understandable. While you're, you know, meditating, and it chanting, falling asleep while you're chanting japa, that can also happen sometimes, right? But to fall asleep while you're in the kirtan, you know, it's more difficult. And the worst thing is to fall asleep while you're taking prasadam. That means you're really tired. I remember in one temple, the devotee who was giving the class fell asleep. When he woke up, you know, everybody was sleeping. He looked around the room. And they were all... Because, you know, the devotees were pushing themselves so hard that they would just collapse practically, you know. Jayananda did that right in front of Prabhupada. You know, he would sit in the back and everyone was talking, and Jayananda would, his head would look down, and everybody would look, and Prabhupada would say, that's okay, just let him rest. You know, because he was working so hard. So I remember many a day where I was, you know, out on the Sankirtan trail, and I was just totally exhausted, and I just couldn't go on, you know, I needed to sleep, and what do? You know, you're in the middle of a downtown area, you know, you just go in the alley, you go to sleep like some bum or something, you know, you couldn't do that. So I had this, don't tell anybody this, you know. I had this technique, you know, this strategy. I would go into a restaurant, or in America they have like these shops, like shopping markets, like a Walmart or, I don't know, something pleasant. And in the corner of it, there would be like a little restaurant, cafe, you know. And usually nobody was in this place, especially like 11 in the morning or something like that, or maybe 3 in the afternoon. Some, maybe for lunch a few people would come there, but like that. But if you went there around 11 or 2 or 3, there would never be people in this place because it was just a place, if you're, you know, really hungry, if you're shopping, you can stop for a few minutes, take something to eat. So I would go to I would sit down at the table, and then the waitress would come up with a little book, and I say, please, could you help me, this is a kind of odd request, I understand, but I've been driving all night, and I'm really tired. I just need to put my head down. Can you just come and give me a shove in about 20 minutes? Like this. And they would, the lady would say, "Oh, sure, darling, no problem. You know, you just rest yourself there, you know." And I would just crash down on the table, you know. And she would come by in 20 minutes and say, "Okay, it's time. You have to go. You asked me to wake you up." Like this. "Come on, darling, you get up now." And, "Okay, thank you, thank you." She would be like, you know, like your mother waking you up or something. And then you'd feel, "Oh, wow." Right? It really helped. Just 15 minutes, just, you know, you're able to continue like this. So I did like that for a number of times, just to stay alive. So, you know, you had to do the needful. In other words, like, you needed to read, then read. You know, you need prasadam, then just take prasadam. You have to sleep, then okay. Just don't sleep the whole day, but, you know, sleep a little bit, whatever you need. So that's how I caught up with my sleep, you know, in these little cafes. And devotees who didn't, I didn't tell anyone I was doing this, you know. So, not everybody could figure out a way to get a little rest, you know. So, by the time the end of the day came, and you guys, you know, devotees were like pushing themselves to the max, and then they had to drive the van, you know. I mean, even nowadays, sometimes devotees get into accidents, and it can be very dangerous, you know. So it's better to, you know, when you feel sleepy, you just pull the car to the side, take a little rest, and then continue afterwards. So, but in those days, it wasn't, recommended or, you know, it was just, you know, you got to do this. You have to make a sacrifice. And, you know, there was this drive, especially if there's, you know, 3-4 men in the back, and you have to drive them to the next place, and everything's depending on you, and, you know, you're driving the car, and it's late at night, and, you know, eyes, you know, falling asleep. You know, the devotees would put toothpicks in their eyes. And, you know. Or they would, a devotee one had a pin, and he would stick himself. Oh! And another devotee had some little sweets, you know. He would fall, he would put something, you know, right? Some kind of little to get a sugar rush, you know, get a little energy. But you know, a lot of times devotees would fall asleep behind the wheel. But somehow or other, I mean, this happened very frequently, you know. And I was living in the van, you know, and we were all living in the van for maybe, you know, a few years. So, and every day, there was always this chance that, you know, a guy with the toothpicks in his eyes, you know, whoosh, you know, could easily crash. But somehow or other, Krishna just, like, saved us, you know. That somehow a devotee would wake up and just say, "Come on, Prabhu, you sleep now, I'll take the wheel." And, you know, somehow that just happened. And I was never in an accident, fortunately, and And I was never in a van that crashed or anything like that. There was always somehow a devotee would wake up and, you know, take over the driving. Or at least somebody, if somebody couldn't drive, then they would, you know, like start massaging the driver and yeah, just talking to him and, you know, like this. Wake him up, like get him fit for driving again. But, you know, like we were living in the van, you know, we would sleep in the van, and, you know, on top of the books there was a piece of wood. So we would sleep on the books, and we would have chant japa on the books, and we would have class where we were sitting on the books, and we would cook on top of the books, and we would read the books, and we would distribute the books, and we would load the books and unload the books. Just books, books, books. So we were, and then when we heard that, you know, Prabhupada said that I'm always meditating on the boys in the vans. You know, that like really touched our hearts and inspired all the devotees. Prabhupada's thinking about us. Gave us strength to continue. So one devotee went to India and came back. He had gotten malaria, so he was sick for a while, but then he got better. But malaria is such a disease that sometimes it comes back, like you get it, you know. So he was driving the van and he was downtown. And suddenly malaria came back. And malaria is like, you know, you get dizzy, you have fever, and you know. So he was driving the van, he just fell asleep while driving the van downtown in some town in America. And he just smashed that van right through a store window, you know. Just, you know, people were in there shopping and suddenly, bash! You know, wow! And there was just like this truck, you know, this van, you know, like in the store, you know. And then it was like, you know, where am I? You know, what happened? You know, like this. Our leader. But it was understandable because he had malaria, so, you know, he was pardoned and he continued with his service. But I guess that could have went under bizarre events. I saw on the news recently that this happened in America. Some people were just sitting in a cafe and crash, you know, there's a car just came right through the glass, right through the... And knocked over the tables and the chairs, and luckily nobody was hurt. But it reminded me of this Leela with this devotee. I remember being on the Christmas marathon. Also, that was during the winter time, and you know we were like out. As I said, we were cold in the morning, we were cold at night, and we were cold all day. And you're standing outside, and your face is red, you know, you can't even feel, you know, your face is like numb, and maybe some mucus is dripping down your face, but you don't even know because it's numb, you know. And sometimes the devotees didn't even have gloves, you know, their hands would just like become like lobster hands, you know, and they just try to take the book and go like that, and the person would try to give a donation. He would put his hand like, this. Standing out all day. But we saw that even if there was enough money, like to get proper clothing, you know, some compassionate lady or person would say, "Oh, you don't have any gloves, darling. Here, take these," you know. And the devotee would get some gloves. "Wow, thanks a lot." Put some gloves on and continue. I remember, because I'm Vata Dosha, I get cold easy, you know. So I always have to, maybe every hour I'd go inside some shop or some, you know, department store and stand by the heater and, you know, I'll go into the bathroom and turn on the hand dryer and, you know, my hands would be like red and, you know, blue and frozen. Warm them up, you know. And then, you know, put my head underneath the dryer. You know. And then when I was thawed out, then I'd go back outside for another hour like this. So one Christmas marathon, they gave us everybody. The only thing we were distributing was Krishna books, and it was these big, this big, you know, this wide, and about this thick. You know, they were like large silver, right? You've seen these ones, right? Silver, and picture of Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? I mean, you can't get more direct Krishna conscious, you know. You know, well, we were passing out these Krishna books to people. And I think this was sometimes, like, there were so many people coming in and out of the store that time that we would even sell the books to the people who were going in the store, which was, you know, like, taboo, you know. Because then the manager would see it. And, "Where did you get this from?" "Oh, there's a guy out there selling it." "What?" And then he would come out, you know, "Get out of here, call the police on you." The security guards would come out with their clubs, you know, something like this. But in this early days, I think it was before there was a lot of salespeople. And so we would just sell books to people going in the stores, you know. And people coming out of the stores to us, it didn't matter. Maybe we didn't know any better at that time, but, you know, we didn't discriminate if they were coming in or out of the store. Right? So I remember once I went in the store to buy something before we left. And there was, you know, thousands of people in this grocery store. I think it was in Michigan. You know, and there was three or four ladies standing in the line for, you know, the cashier, right, to charge up their bath. They had baskets, and they were all holding Krishna books. So they noticed each other, you know. "Oh, you got one too? Oh, so did I." And the other one in the front said, "Oh, yeah, so did I." And there was like three of them, they were all talking. "Yeah, aren't these beautiful?" "Yeah, they sure are. Look at these pictures, you know. Yeah, it's amazing." And one lady said, "Yeah, and I got it just for $1. "Really? You got it for $1? "Yeah, I just gave a donation. I can't believe they're giving out these big, beautiful books just for a donation. It's amazing. How can they do it?" And, it, you know, all these ladies were talking like this, and I was on the line, I was listening to this, and I was thinking, "Wow, this is great, you know. Lord Chaitanya's mission is spreading, and, you know, these common housewives, they're all appreciating the books and the artwork in the books, and it made me feel great. Christmas marathon, special mercy is coming, you know, somehow or other. They're going to go home and read these stories, you know, about the little boy Krishna. He plays his flute by the Jamuna. And he dances with his girlfriends, the handmaidens of Raj, and has picnics in the forest with his friends, and they play leapfrog and, you know, all those things, all these stories they're going to read. So the bus would regularly visit many of the temples, like Detroit Temple, New York, St. Louis, New Vrindavan, Kansas City, Itanagari, Chicago temple. We'd park the bus in the back of the temple, and we'd move in the temple for a few days or a week. Sometimes the bus needed to get fixed, or sometimes we needed to buy books or whatever. And we got to see the temples. And that was a great benediction, you know, because it felt unique being in a temple. And then we saw the other devotees, and we'd have kirtan with them in a big temple room with big, beautiful altar with Radha and Krishna deities, Radha Kunja Bihari, Kishore Kishori, Radha Govinda in New York, or Radha Vrindavan Chandra, and the whole community. And like, we went to New Vrindavan when the Prabhupada's palace was just some cinder blocks. You know, cinder blocks means like bricks, large gray bricks. Right? They didn't even. They just, I think, had the foundation and the bricks on the, like this. And it was just sand on the floor, like earth. They didn't even, it was just, the Prabhupada's palace was like this. We had a kirtan in the building. In other words, what we have here is much more developed than what was there at that time. Because there was just sand on the earth on the floor and some, you know, bricks on the wall, making up the walls. And, you know, in the temples there were also, you know, most of the devotees were engaged in book distribution, maybe 70% or so, sometimes 80-90% of the devotees. They were just going out all day. They would go to local shops and they would go to the local airports like this. And gradually I got promoted from the, you know, the shopping, the parking lots of the shopping malls to the airport, you know. And I started in Chicago. And when you came into the Chicago airport, it was like, this was considered to be the, you know, the Himalaya of book distribution, Mount Everest, you know, of book distribution, because it was the place which was the most difficult to, conquer. But if you did it, it would be a great achievement. You can distribute the most books in this place and meet most, you know, intelligent people and so forth. So, I started distributing books in the airports. I remember the first day I was meeting people and presenting the books, and the whole day I didn't sell even one book. And it was just devastating, you know. I just started crying. It was like having a nervous breakdown. And a devotee told me, yes, this is, now you're initiated. You know, you have to go through this to enter the O'Hara Airport crew of the, you know, club of devotees, and you had to get to the point where you're crying. Then you could distribute. Once we were in Gita Nagari in the summer, we had a big feast. I forget, there was some celebration. And the devotees, you know, they had a usual ISKCON feast with two sabjis, rice, halva, pakoras, chutney, and of course sweet rice, halva, and sweets, gulab jamuns. Right? Every feast had gulab jamuns and sweet rice, as much as you can possibly drink, at least 1 liter per person. And after they finished the glub, usually after the feast, they would have a glubjman contest, right? And that means, you know, after you eat a huge feast, then people, you know, would see who can eat the most lunches. And devotees would eat 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 glumjaments, you know. Sometimes they had to go around the back and, you know. And then after that, you know, then they would have, you know, who could catch the glumjaman, right? They would throw the glumjaman. Sometimes it would be like 50 meters or something. Or over the temple building on the other side, you know, throw it. And, jump up and catch it like this. And then the person who tried to do this but lost, then he would have to drink the glubjaman juice. <You know? laughs> And one time Mahamantra, he lost the contest, and you know, they said, okay, you got to drink the glubjaman juice. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. They said, yes, you are. You better do it. They said, no, I'm not going to do it. They jumped on him. They pinned him to the ground. They got this big bucket, this huge, pot, which was half filled with juice. And they started pouring it. They said, okay, open your mouth. And they just like poured it all over his head. And he was totally covered with glutamine juice. That's American style, a little bit rough, you know. But then finally, after 1 year or so, it was in the summer, I can't remember exactly when, but they decided that Radha Damodar has seen enough traveling and enough of America, and they're going to put him on the farm. They put Radha Damodar on the farm where they can get proper worship and, you know, lots of nice offerings and, you know, by qualified brahmanas and this and that. I don't know. There was also some financial considerations and political situations, which I didn't know about because I was a young devotee. But in any case, they put Radha Damodar. The authorities decided to put Radha Damodar in on Gita Nagari farm, where they still are. And so we had a meeting. I think it was in Louisville, Kentucky. And they had a rented house there. And I think three buses pulled up. All the neighbors were flipped out, you know. The lawn was completely wet because devotees were taking showers outside on the lawn, you know, and then walking up and down the street. So there was mud everywhere, and there was mud in the house. And Tamal Krishnamaraj came, and some of the other leaders of the Radha Damodar party. And they, you know, we had big kirtans and classes. And then finally Tamal Krishnamaraj addressed the entire assembly. And he explained that now Radha Damodar will be taken to Gita Nagari. And there will be Gornitai deities placed on the bus where they were, called Nimai, Shishi Nimai Nitai, and the devotees on that bus will now worship them. At that time, I think there were three buses, and I was fortunate enough to be on the bus that had Radha Damodar, and the other two buses had Gornitai deities. So now we were also getting Gornitai deities. And I was a new devotee, just newly initiated, just in the movement for 1 year. And, you know, just to show how potent this process is, right, they decided to move the deities. When Tamal Krishna was telling me that the deities would move, and now, you know, we're going to have new deities, and it was like, what? How can we go on without Radha Damodar? It's not possible. How can we, you know, live on Radha Damodar bus without Radha Damodar? And I remember I was sitting there like looking. They had Radha Damodar and I think three or four Gornitai, three Gornitai Didis, two of them from the bus, and then the new one that was going to be installed on the bus, on our bus. And I was just looking at them, and I look at Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was speaking, and I would look at the altar again, and then I would look back, and I would look at all the devotees, and I would look at Radha Damodar, and I started crying. And I started crying and crying, and I just couldn't stop. I felt separation from Radha Damodar is going to leave us now. And I felt this emotional attachment, a deep attachment to the deities. And now when I look back on that, I think that, wow, that's amazing. You know, I was just in the movement, in the process for 1 year or less. Not more than a year, like 11, 12 months at the most. And I already developed this attachment for Radha Damodar. So much that when I heard they were leaving, I started crying. So just see how potent is the process of devotional service. That any, just some Malecha Bhakta from Malecha Desh, you know, he's trying to do some seva, and just from, you know, we were making garlands every day and distributing books and stealing flowers from the neighbors and all of this stuff that I told you about on the first day. And just from doing all these little things and chanting in front of the deities, seeing them every day, you develop attachment for them. And then if someone tells you, okay, now your deities, they're going to go far away, you won't see them now, and naturally you feel, the devotee feels separation. So that's the potency of devotional service, and the potency of being on such a intense, I don't say, kind of like a crash course of bhakti yoga. You know, like it was like a boot camp, you know, for devotees, for preachers. You know, Indra was also on the Radha Damodar party, and so was Madhav Maharaj and many devotees who, Kavichandra Maharaj, Keshava Bharati Maharaj, they were also all on the Radha Damodar bus, or one of the buses at some time or another. So they, the formative years are important. The first 2 years or 3 years that you're in the movement, what you do and how you do it, and what association you get, that will influence your whole lifetime. So we were, we were thrown in the deep, so to speak, you know, and we are forced to swim in the deepest part of the ocean immediately by, you know, intense preaching, intense sadhana, intense austerity, intense devotional practices, that it really like molded the spiritual lives of all those devotees for their whole lives. So there you have it, Prabhu's that's the end of my presentation. Hope that you at least can get some idea of, you know, my experience. And so many devotees have written memories of, you know, the early days of ISKCON. It's a very popular theme, and this was my experience. So thank you very much for listening. Hope you had some benefit from this, or a little inspiration. If you want to ask some questions now, I can try to answer them by the grace of God somehow or other. But yeah. How does one develop and maintain intensity? Good question. It's mentioned in the Shastras, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Puram. The word Tivra Bhakti means intense, concentrated. So, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. Well, one should worship the Lord, Supreme Person, with intense bhakti. How do you maintain, how do you develop that? I think by association with others who are intense. I mean, you'd have to be a very strong individual to be able to develop intensity when everyone around you is not intense, casual. So I would think that the main thing is the association of devotees. So you have to seek out those who are intensely absorbed. And if you can catch up this mood, then you can maintain it, I think, in any circumstance, because it gives you a higher taste. Anyone else want to ask something? Well, again, associating with those who are doing it and understanding, you know, what's in the books, how important it is to present it to other people, and just doing it. You know, how do you become a drunkard? You drink. Right? So you want to be a good book distributor, you distribute books. And you don't stop. And usually after 2 or 3 years, you become expert enough to develop a taste for it. And then you start to feel some kinship with the people on the street, like as if you somehow knew them before. And that is the beginning of compassion. So that feeling can take you a long way. Main thing for a beginner is just to do it and to continue doing it. And Lord Chaitanya's mercy will rain down upon you. Yes?
I read so many letters of Srila Prabhupada where he instructed his followers to read his books. To reading, to studying his books, so it's possible that those times the devotees think it's Maya, you should not read. Is it possible that it happened?
Good question. I don't really know the answer to that one. I think that a lot of these instructions, like in the early days, like, you know, we didn't have all of these things. There was no computers. There was no letters, books, or there was no Prabhupada Lilamrita. There was no Prabhupada Shikshamrita. There was just Bhagavad Gita, Krishna book, Nectar Devotion, and half of the Bhagavatams. You know, like this. And so those instructions mainly, I think, are in letters or in room conversations and few places in the books, perhaps, but somehow the mood, I guess due to the mode of passion and immaturity, you know, you would read those over those few obscure places and then just it would go in one ear and out the other. As you know, I mean, there's also instructions about Varnashram, there's instructions about you know, being respectful to all living beings, and somehow, you know, just went and we didn't catch the idea, you know. I think it's just due to immaturity. So I think that with maturity and with a expanded access to Prabhupada's instructions, which are everywhere now, more easily accessible, it's a lot easier to understand what he said, what he meant, and like this. Because before it was very rare. I mean, we never had a letter, you know, letters, books, or a folio program, or anything like this. So whatever he said about this was kind of, you know, just for the ears of the people in the room who were there at that time. I think that's the main cause or causes. You know. Something else? Yes? No, I didn't. When I joined, he had already disappeared. Or whatever. Like that. And, so I didn't have so much I didn't have any experience with him. Nineteen 1976. It ended, I think, in end of 78. Yeah, about 2 years, I think. Maybe the beginning of 79, but something like that. In our bus, it was between 25 and 30. Something like that. And if it had more, then there would be more bands. If there was 30, 35, then there would have to be, I think, like 4 vans traveling along. I don't really know what happened. Like I said, I was just going out every day distributing books. I didn't know anything about any of the managerial decisions. You know, I was a new devotee. 1 year in the movement, 2 years in the movement. And at that time, you know, when you're so young, it's like you don't hear any of these things and you don't really care anyway. You're in too much ecstasy, I guess, you know. I didn't really know exactly why it stopped. And I never did any research to find out. I don't know. Because no matter what the cause was, you can't bring it back, you know. So. I cannot turn the hands of the clock back. Okay, so we'll stop now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Shri Radha Damodara ki. Nitai go premanandi. Hare Krishna. By the way, I have a picture of I have a little picture here. Those who were interested, you can see. This was our party. Some of the members of the party. You have to guess. Yeah. It's the only picture I have of myself when I was young. Some what? One picture is worth 1,000 words. I'm still enthusiastic. Yeah, Varsha can appreciate because he's an actor. An artist.